This is the Packet Pushers, the greatest ever podcast on data networking because real engineers get together to talk nerdy about networking. Located in the hot aisle, wedged in between the server and the storage racks, right there where the WAN connects to the data center, one row over from the legacy Solaris boxes is where we will be, basking in the electronic radiation that bathes us there. Packet Pushers is a place where no one has to speak in terms that business people understand. Nerdy is the normal, deep dive is the baseline, and you can smell the fumes of the virtual whiteboard markers in your ears. Yes, it's that time. I'm Greg Farrow. You may know me from being on the podcast somewhat, but joining me today is Mr. Banks. How are you today, sir?
You said greatest ever data networking podcast, and I was like, oh, my chest swelled with pride, and I thumped on it a bit, stood up on my desk, cheered. It was a good feeling. Good feeling.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's true, but it's a great thing to just say. I mean, who's going to say we aren't?
our audience, I think. You know, they're the people who keep us honest.
Yeah, fair enough.
That's how it works. Well, today's show, we are being sponsored by Viptela. Now, as many of you know, the Packet Pushers has done a lot of thinking and talking about software-defined networking for the last few years. And we've sort of seen in the last year the emergence of data center SDN. And thank goodness that that's over, and now we're ready to move on to SDN somewhere else. And many of you might groan, but I tell you what, SDN in the WAN is going to be just the biggest thing you've ever done in 2015, and Viptela is here. So I'd like to, first of all, introduce Ramesh from Viptela. Hi, Ramesh. Please tell the audience what you do and where we can find you on the internet.
Absolutely. Hey guys, thanks for that wonderful intro, Greg and Ethan. I'm Ramesh Prabhakaran. I've been with Viptela since its inception. Out here, run a multitude of functions, product management, marketing, and a few others as well. And it's absolutely exciting to be both in this space, in the SD-WAN space, and also on this podcast. So look forward to talking to the audience about what we do, how we do it, and also share some insights that we have from customers as well.
Okay, so let's kick this off. Let's just get straight into the meat of it, right? So the WAN, everybody knows about the WAN. It's really, really expensive. I've read somewhere, I read some research a couple of years ago that said the WAN is 60% of networking, 60 to 75% of a networking budget for your average IT organization. So anything that we can do that's going to reduce the cost of the WAN and, let's face it, make it easier to operate, make costs better, things like that, is going to make a significant difference to the business. So what's changed with Viptela? What's Viptela doing to suddenly change the way the WAN works?
So instead of saying how we solve the problem, let me look at it from the customer angle. And I actually like to tell the story a lot. So we were sitting in a room with a CIO of a large bank who looked squarely in the face of the network architect and said, why is it that I can stream high-def video at home? My kids are doing gaming with Xbox Live, and my wife is on FaceTime. I can't do any of these things over a corporate network when I pay 10 times the amount, right? So it ties a lot of things together. It ties the cost angle, it ties the experience angle, it ties the need for a new WAN together. Now, the very same CIO now turned across to his cloud architect and said, why is it that my Office 365 is so much better when I'm at home instead of my office, right? So this actually, in many ways, encapsulates the problem. It's the problem of cost, it's the problem of rigidity, and it's the problem of cloud performance that many of these guys are looking.
Yeah, okay, so cloud-like, so you're sort of drawing a bow between what we have in the data center today with physicals and static servers and everything's locked down. The WAN is kind of like that. What we want is the fluidity, the abstraction of virtualization to come to the WAN to give me that same sort of features that cloud has.
Yeah, so multiple things there. So one of it is definitely around virtualization. The other one is just user experience, right? So today it is not economical, neither is it possible to go halfway across the globe from where you are to access a cloud-based service when you know that a similar presence is available right across the street, right? And so that is the part that's actually bugging a whole lot of the CIOs and also the cloud architects as well. Why is it that the network is not built so that you can get the cloud performance that you need? So we've looked at multiple different architectures here, right? So the way it's actually built today and also what are possible options. You have some stories from the carriers, you have some stories from the vendors, the network architects, the super smart network architects, and the operations guys are also looking at this space to see how you can optimize. But if you actually look at it in its entirety, the problem is patch, right? So there's a lot of patching that happens in order to fix the problem, while what the WAN really needs is a shot in the arm, right? And so to us, that's important. You can't really patch problems and fix these large issues and the issues around cost, the issues around rigidity, the issues around cloud performance. You really can't patch the problem. You kind of have to look at it from the ground up, and that's what Wipula provides.
There's a couple of pieces here, though. I mean, because we're talking around kind of a central WAN problem in an enterprise, which is a lot of money for a little bandwidth versus internet and consumer grade internet where they've got a big pipe at home that's broadband in a download direction that they don't pay a lot for. And so you're talking about trying to leverage more bandwidth more efficiently, kind of harness a big pipe to the internet for lower money and then get some of that performance back. But then the trick that all the architects have to deal with is how do I safely and securely pump that traffic across that cheap feed? And then, of course, there's the quality issues. Enterprise apps need quality controls, quality of service. How do you know that it's safe to actually push an application across the internet as well? I mean, I think that those are getting into more of the specifics of what you're dealing with, right?
Absolutely. And that's why you see most of what we talk about, we actually have security front and center of what we do, right? And it's not because we've developed intellectual property around it and so we want to actively market it, but actually that's the requirement from a network, right? If you move from a private circuit into a public infrastructure, the first thing that comes to everybody's mind is security. And the second thing is quality of experience, right? And quality of service and so forth. So that's why any solution that needs to provide this capability over a public infrastructure needs to have security front and center. And I'll go a little further than that, right? And we'll go back to the example of onboarding cloud-based applications. Do you really want to open up every single site that you have? And if you're a large bank, for example, or a large healthcare, you have thousands of those. Do you really want to open every single one of them to the public internet right there? Because then you would have to mitigate risk. You would have to mitigate all of your compliance considerations and so forth. Or would you rather deal with that at the network architecture level, where you can potentially take traffic coming from those sites into a common location, like a colo facility, and then allow access after doing some kind of minimal inspection and so forth, right? So that's why if you look at the WAN problem, it's not about I can build new infrastructure that gives me this flexibility and so forth. It's actually a combination of what the infrastructure can give you and also architecture. And in order to really build this wide area with all of these considerations, you need to understand, I guess, the problem from the enterprise angle and also from the carrier angle, because the carriers will have a large role to play here. And unless you understand the minutiae of how things work, it's not really possible to provide a solution that will work elegantly. So it's multiple things. It's security, it's accessing the service in the most optimal way possible, it's architecture, it's visibility, and a whole bunch of things.
Yeah. So there's a few things here in the SDN-WAN that I've identified as key issues, right? One of them is that you want to be able to have carrier independence and transport independence. And the two sort of go hand in hand, but they're kind of different. One of the things that you want to be able to do in your WAN is to have, today a lot of people just do business with one carrier because that's the only way you can build a network, is to have two connections from, big carrier one. Because if you had a connection from carrier one and carrier two, their networks operate differently, and so your cost strategies have to be different. Or one of them is using Ethernet DWDM and the other one's using TDM. They've got an DS3 or an E3 circuit and the other one wants to give you a gigabit Ethernet, and there's massive differences in the network. You need to be able to build a WAN that's independent of the actual physical. Just like virtualization in the data, it says we don't care what hardware's underneath. What we want to do is build this system that runs over the top of whatever's underneath. Good hardware will give you better performance or more reliable systems, but it won't inherently make any difference to the actual overlay. And that's what virtualization did. It took Microsoft Windows and Linux and abstracted it away from the CPU. That's one of the things we want in the WAN. We want to be able to use 4G LTE connections sometimes, because when you move into a brand new branch office, Maybe the only thing you can get is an LTE connection for the first 3 months while you wait for the carrier to extract their finger out of their tush and finally pull that landline into your office, right? So you want to build a WAN over the top of whatever it is. It might be a Wi-Fi link. It might be a 3G or a 4G. It might be MPLS. It might be frame relay. It might be TDM. It might be ATM, whatever it is. But you don't want to actually care what the physical network is. But we do today, right? Yeah. So that's one thing, right? And the second thing is network segmentation. So in the WAN, you get one security zone, and it's all bad, right? So all your data that comes out of your branch gets mixed up into one horror pot of insecurity, and then it gets to your wherever your WAN edge is, usually where your data center is, and then all of a sudden it's blessed as secure because it goes through a firewall. Well, that's patently ridiculous. It is not secure when it gets to the data center. It's been out there across an unencrypted, unsafe carrier network that has zero encryption and almost no safety. The only reason we regard the WAN as secure is because we assume it to be secure because we can't do anything about making the WAN secure.
Absolutely. Right? And you touched on multiple things here. So let me see if I can take each one of them in a progressive fashion, right? So the first thing, and I'll come at it from an example of a retail, a really large retail that we were talking to. What they wanted to do was actually go set up a shop essentially at a location where they know they cannot get broadband, where they cannot get MPLS. But you know what? They need to build the store out. So the first thing they do is actually bring a 4G or LTE connection and get the store up and running, and then hire the HR, the construction folks, and a whole bunch of other guys to set up the store. But you know what? Their network is up and running. Today, in order to do that, you need to have the provision for the circuit, which it takes a decent amount of time in the order of months. And so they really don't want to get to that. So when
that's
we talk it. About...
That's not a decent amount of time. That's an indecent amount of time.
Exactly.
That is not a happy thing. That is not a positive.
So when we talk about progressively moving, so we're talking about you start off a site with a 4G LTE, and after the site is up and running, then you want to augment bandwidth, you want to get some level of predictability with respect to latency and so forth, and so you can actually get a broadband connection. And when the store goes to a certain point where you really want a critical connection and so forth, then you can actually move to an MPLS. Or you can have all three for redundancy's sake as well. And so what you really need is exactly what you started off this discussion with, which is transport independence, right? And transport independence and carrier independence are absolutely two different things. And I cannot think of any better stark contrast here than MPLS and broadband. In the MPLS network, we all know that there is a circuit and there is a service. You give prefixes to the carrier, and the carrier takes you from point A to point B. That's great because they can charge you a premium, and you don't have to worry about it. Now, if you have to build a parallel network to that over broadband, then you have to manage all of the underlay, the overlay, the security, the routing, the policies, and the whole bunch of things on top. So now, right out of the bat, you have two different networks that work two completely different ways. And so if you have to bring those two things together, and this really at the essence of it is where the devil is in the details, right? Mm-hmm. You can think of transport independence, but you're not building one network at a time. You have two parallel networks. And so you need to be able to normalize the function. You need to be able to move the functions so that at the
way
edge
we
of
do
the network.
That today, and the way we do that today is we build this monstrous MPLS overlay.
Exactly.
So and the only way you can do it today is to go and get MPLS out, spend 5 years learning how BGP, LDP, MPLS, you know, operates in real life, because it's not easy.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's not the only way. I mean, you do DMVPN as an overlay. You do some kind of a horrible routing-based failover that goes to an IPsec tunnel on a firewall, something brutal like that. No matter what solution you end up picking, it probably kind of stinks as far as the whole, I have parallel networks to deal with, and they act like two parallel networks. They don't act like one big fabric you can do things with.
Exactly, right? And that's the part that really bugged us when we got this company started, right? That why is it that it has to be this way? And we looked at the wide area, and that's the place where you can actually realize the benefits of both operations and also the circuit costs in a very easy way. So just to, and I'll go back to one of the other things that you mentioned, Greg, which is around segmentation, right? It is not that today people don't want segmentation, it's that they don't have an option, because you can provide all the segmentation in the branch. You can create as many VLANs VLANs as you want in the branch and as many VLANs and VXLANs and all of the other virtualized technologies in the data center. But yeah, really, when the two meet, you have one big segment to deal with. And it's, and again, it bugs the crap out of a whole lot of people. And I'm not saying this because our technology provides it, but rather if you talk to customers, they say, hey, I have line of business that I need to provide segmentation for, because if one impacts the other, then somebody's going to put a gun to my head. So that's number one. The second one is I need to have compliance. If I'm talking about a really highly regulated industry, like a large financial or retail or healthcare, they need to have that segmentation for compliance reasons. And it's easier to do it inside the branch. You create a VLAN and you're done. But it's really hard to extend that over the wide area.
So might do it with VERFs, right? You can create segmentation with MPLS VERFs, but you have to have MPLS to the branch. And as soon as you start deploying MPLS-capable routers in the branch location, your costs go up.
Exactly. And also you need to train your staff on how LDP works or RSVP works, how to create VRFs, cloud policies, this, that.
Now, that's right. And now add 3,000 nodes into that MPLS network in your corporate backbone.
Exactly. And you're a carrier at that time, right? I mean, at that point, you really become a carrier. You have enough stuff on your resume to actually go build out a carrier at that time. But to us, segmentation is actually front and center of it, right? So it's not about building, and it goes back to what I mentioned earlier. It is not about just building new boxes, right? It's about how do you architect a solution so that to us, at the base of it is a secure infrastructure. I need to go from anywhere to anywhere. If my business requires voice to go from branch to branch, I need to have that paved path with this secure all the time and available. Now, a layer on top of that to us is routing. And when we say routing, people immediately think of it as, hey, okay, I just disseminate information so that I can go from point A to point B. To us, it goes much beyond that. It's not just routing to get you from point A to point B, but it's about building topologies as well. If my business requires that certain applications in my data center are only accessed in a hub and spoke fashion, then I need to be able to do that. While, you know what, if we ask an enterprise architect about what do you really desire for voice, they'll say, I need voice to go freely between my branch locations or any location to any location. I don't want that to go through a hub location. So right off the bat, you have requirements for an hub and spoke topology, you have requirements for a regional mesh, you have requirements for a partial and a full mesh all over exactly the same infrastructure. And that's what complicates routing today. So when we say routing,
and routing is not easy. So one of the other things, maybe we should dive into some of the technology, like hustle along into the technology. But I mean, this section here was meant to highlight what's wrong with your WAN. You know, the things like technology, you're stuck with a given technology, you can't change, like having multiple MPLS providers, help multiple carriers can be problematic. If you want to have a world-class WAN, you might have to have a half a dozen different providers on a global network, and then you use MPLS to turn it into a single network, and now you're actually a carrier on top of carriers on top of carriers, usually.
Exactly.
Right? And now you've got routers in 3,000 locations, say, or 1,000. Or, if you've got a branch network of 500 sites, you've got 500 routers to manage. You haven't got one lot of one thing to manage. You've got 500 individual elements to manage. You've got a single security zone, even though you might want multiple security zones, you don't have any choice. And perhaps the biggest single thing that's wrong with the WAN today, before we move into talking about how Viptela can sort of solve these things, is cost. Think about when you have two links out of your office or your key location, and yet you're only ever using one of them because routing only lets you balance over, have best and only path. So one path is active, but the other 50% of the money you waste on WAN is wasted.
Yeah, exactly. And people seem to be okay with that probably about 5 years ago, and they're not okay right now because, once again, you can never have enough bandwidth. And to actually see one of your circuits be idle, that's a crime.
it's a financial crime.
Exactly.
Especially when you're spending, like if you think you're paying $10,000 a month for a 1 gig tail circuit into a branch office, say hypothetically, right? And if you buy two of them, that's $20,000 a month, and you're now paying $250,000 a year for that one site, and you're only using half of that capacity. That is your shareholders are not happy with you.
exactly.
It's like, imagine taking half your employees and saying, oh no, they're just there in case the other half don't turn up for work.
Exactly. And this is one of those cases where actually you just, any way you look at it, you cannot rationally justify the investment, right? But And it's also one of those places where the technology has dictated how people pay and how the business needs to work, right? And yeah. and that to us is again very unsettling. So we and those are the things that actually we fixed in our architecture okay. and the solution.
So Viptel has got the answer to all of these problems is what we're trying to say.
That's or we, right,
or,
yes.
Or we wouldn't have brought them up.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's talk about what does an enterprise need to deploy your solution? How do you know, what is it that we have to bring to the table here to make this work? And what changes in the WAN do we need to do? So let's talk a little bit about how, so let's say I've bitten off on this idea of doing these things to my WAN. What does Viptela need to, what does the customer need to activate this new idea? What are we doing?
At the very root of it, you need essentially three components from our solution, right? There is a need for a physical device at every location because something needs to be able to push bits and something needs to be able to encrypt and do QoS and so forth. So there is a physical device and that's a router that we call as a VEdge router, right? It's a full-blown router. It runs standard BGP, OSPF and so forth. As far as the rest of the network is concerned, it's also the place where we have a bit of a secret sauce so that we can actually build overlay tunnels to the other locations in the network, pass information to the network, and so forth.
Now, so the VEdge router is replacing equipment at a customer site, or is in addition to some whatever WAN termination equipment they might already have?
That's a very interesting question and observation. So we actually built it as a full-blown router with the intent of replacing the existing CPE. And our customers exactly come to that same conclusion. We don't lead with that in many of the conversations because depending on who you're talking to the network architect, that's okay. To the operations folks, it might not be okay. So we say this is a full-blown router. You can actually minimally insert this into your existing infrastructure. It can sit alongside the existing router, behind it, in front of it, or even replace it. And when we are done with the conversation, when we talk about the technology, the capabilities, they say, why do I need to have the existing router in place? Can I just replace that with yours, right? And so in many ways, ours is a full-blown solution that you can use to deploy your wide area. So that's a piece of it.
I think the important thing to take away from that is, that I think is really important, is this isn't... there's a certain big vendor out there who would like to tell you that everything that you have to do involves throwing out everything that you own and starting again. And this solution that Viptela is putting forward is you could start with 3 or 4 sites out of a 100-site network and test it out because you don't have to replace the assets. You can just put their routing software in front of your existing routers and put it in the line like a WAN optimization or a proxy server or something conceptually like that. And you can start working with it and proving that it works. Is that right, Ramesh?
Yeah, so actually, yes. So one of the things, and we've been building large enterprise networks and carrier networks from our previous lives, and one thing we know is we can't ask the customer to replace their entire infrastructure. So right from day one of the considerations and design requirements that we had was it needs to interwork with an existing environment. And if that means somebody needs to get comfortable with the solution by just deploying it at 3 different sites, then that's the minimal insertion point that we're looking for, right? So which means that they can either replace the equipment that they have, or many of our customers are actually keeping their existing stuff as is. Essentially, the existing router connected over MPLS, they put us, connect that to broadband, and that way they have both of the networks and both the visibility as well. What I mean by that is, from a broadband perspective, we are directly connected into the broadband circuit, so we can build overlay tunnels. We also give you visibility into loss latency, jitter, and so forth on that circuit. And also, we do exactly the same thing over the existing MPLS infrastructure, because to us, the device sitting right next to us is nothing more than a transport hop at that point. And so we can build an overlay over the MPLS as well. And that kind of changes the discussion with the customers because they immediately look at it and go, oh, so I'm able to measure what my carrier is really doing with your infrastructure. So that's valuable because I no longer have to rely on my 4.9's availability contract. I can actually measure and go back to the carrier and say, hey, I'm getting these type of loss, this type of latency and jitter while my contract says something else. And I'm able to compare also what my MPLS infrastructure gives me today to what this broadband infrastructure. So having that visibility right in front of you actually helps you make a very informed decision, because over time you can see that the loss on a broadband circuit is not as high, the latency characteristics are not as bad as well, and so you can slowly start peeling applications off and start moving that into the other infrastructure.
because this is a nerdy podcast, right, I just want to dive into why your visibility is a bit better. Now, I happen to know that through the work I've done with SDN and so forth, is that the visibility that's possible using SDN is far, far more better. Or better. Isn't that a great, that's a shocking use of the word English language.
You're Australian, we'll overlook it.
Yeah. Sometimes I just wonder where I get it from. Now, the thing is that when we have an SDN type of environment, but internally in your appliance, we're using sort of flow-like principles inside of your routing device, your edge device. Is that correct?
We don't subscribe too much to the flow-by-flow manipulation theory. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, essentially, we rely on prefixes. We rely on prefixes, which means we rely on routing. We also do classification of flows coming in. So what you don't want to do, and there's no yes or no answer to your question, so that's how I have to clarify and qualify it. So what we don't want to do is actually have the edge device deal with all of the flow information, ship that to a centralized controller and let the really mondo centralized controller make decisions, because that would be, we all know that's a recipe for disaster. So we want the edge device to have enough local intelligence so that it can make decisions by itself, but get facilitated by the centralized controller for anything that needs to go network wide.
So what you're saying is it's sort of like a distributed controller architecture. There's a central controller that says, this is the things that my edge devices need to know. And then the edge devices themselves have enough intelligence in the WAN to make local decisions. They don't need the WAN to be working to be functional. So obviously the WAN's not always there. So the devices have to be intelligent enough to sustain themselves if the controller's access to the core is not working or something like that.
Wow, Greg, you're always one step ahead in terms of what I want to say. So I love that, actually. So, and the reason for doing that is exactly that reason, right? Which is you can't rely on your connectivity to be up all the time.
WAN to be a WAN.
Well, exactly. That's just it. I mean, even in a data center, it's hard to rely on that connectivity. But much more likely in a WAN scenario, forget it. You know there's going to be times that the edge router is not going to be able to talk to the controller for sure.
Exactly, right? And at the same time, you also want to be able to make local decisions for repair, right? So what I mean by that is, if you have a single device and a single circuit and that goes down, guess what? We just pack everything up, go for coffee, right? There's not much you can do there. But if you have a single device and two different circuits and one of them goes down and you lose some connectivity to the controller, then you should be able to do a switch over to the other circuit so that, or if you were doing active-active, then move all the traffic to the other circuit so that you have no hit in performance or no hit in traffic, right? So in order to embrace that type of a solution and in order to facilitate that type of a deployment, you need to have local intelligence. Now, how much of local intelligence do we need? I think that's where you really have to be careful. If you put too much, then it becomes a full-blown router, at which point it complicates software. It also complicates the heck out of the cost. So you have to treat very carefully, not have too minimal a functionality and ship all of the intelligence to the controller. Neither should you have too much of functionality as well. So the answer is somewhere in the middle. And we have learned from our experiences in both deploying and architecting large networks in order to know what that middle ground is.
Okay, so the obvious things are there, right? The first question that your average network engineer is going to say is, well, what happens if the WAN goes out in an SDN-like environment? And the answer is you just build an architecture that works on the assumption that the WAN is probably going to be out for an extended period. But
exactly.
But the thing here is that you're still managing flow state in the device. So in the same way that it sort of sounds a bit more like NetFlow than OpenFlow. So NetFlow is like a monitor that, you know, that monitors the fib entry in the networking device and produces stats, but ships ejects a record for accounting. You're doing your analytics by monitoring the fib entry or the flow state in the device and building analytics on the device itself and then shipping it home. How does that visibility and analytics work? Dive into that for me.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So, and before I get into that, I just want to qualify and clarify one thing. We are aware of everything hitting our device and on flow-by-flow basis and so forth, but the policies that you want to enforce should not have to be flow-by-flow, because we all know that is a nightmare to manage, right? And so the policies that get enforced are at the aggregate level, and one thing that we all know works with respect to aggregation is routing. And so we enforce policies based on that. We also enforce policies based on access control and so on and so forth. So now getting into a bit of detail into the visibility itself is when traffic from, so let's say you have a branch and traffic hits our device from the branch side, you want to know a few things. You want to know what type of traffic it is. You want to know what all policy it needs to go through. You also want to know what segment it belongs to. And so it's not enough if you just make a decision based on all of this. You also need to provide that visibility back. And it goes back to one of the things our customers asked for, which is they are the central IT networking team. And so they serve multiple lines of business. And in order to have a chargeback model to the line of business, they need to know what is really happening on a segment-by-segment basis. So just an example of things that you need to collect, things that you need to do in order to facilitate this infrastructure.
Right. But those I just want to drill into the visibility, how you do that, right? Because it's really key, I think, to understanding is most of us do visibility, so-called visibility, in the network today by polling SNMP. Maybe you have a NetFlow collector in the core parts of your WAN, but that's the only visibility that we have. You know, we can poll SNMP MIB2 stuff or maybe some of the proprietary MIBs to do per flow, but we're relying on these fairly, you know, static, uncrufty SNMP2 MIB architectures that basically are pointless. They're not all that good as a data source.
Exactly, right? And so that's where we bring in the third component into our solution, which is vManage, right? So vManage is essentially the overall management monitoring entity into the overall Viptela system. What it does is it actually pulls information from various devices. It also runs a correlation engine so that you can aggregate this information and show that in a very meaningful way. One of the shortcomings that we see in the traditional things that you just mentioned, SNMP and NetFlow, is you just ship information that you have. So the role of the device is to get, collect, and ship. There's hardly any intelligence applied. All of the intelligence is applied at the remote end that receives this bulk of information. And really, if you look at it, nobody wants to sit and go through and say, oh, this is important and I need to apply this logic over this logic and so forth. There are guys like Splunk that do that for syslog, but you really don't have anything that does it for a combination of MIBs, logs, and also the visibility. And that's what we thought was really, really important for the operations teams, right? So we talked a lot about architecture, but an equally compelling and equally important element in the system is operations. And operations wants what? They want to be able to get things up and running very quickly. They also want to know that they can push policies very quickly and do change control and all that. At the same time, if you know it's a well-oiled machine, you need to know how it's working. You need to have visibility. And there's a layer of intelligence you can put on top of all the information that you collect. And we know what that information is because we built the system. And apply logic on top of it so that we can just export the relevant data so that irrespective of whether you're an operations person or an architecture person or if you're the CIO looking for just aggregate information, you get that view into the overall network. So to us, operations is an equally important piece that needs to be addressed and that needs to be deployed. So when you actually get into the dashboard, you will be able to see a few things. And we always like, we are people with very simple minds. And so we actually like to put hierarchy in terms of information. What I mean by that is you should be able to look at a single device, what it's doing, what type of traffic it's getting, how is it behaving and so forth. You should also be able to go one step above, look at it at the site level. So if I have two devices at a branch or five devices in my campus, I should be able to look at how my site is performing as well. And then I should be able to go one level up. I should be able to look at it at the regional basis. I should be able to go one level up. I should be able to look at the overall network basis as well. So now if I'm actively searching for problems, then maybe I go through one device at a time. Or if I want to be alerted, then I just look at the network level and then drill down all the way to where the problem is, right? And so that's from a monitoring standpoint. So that's an example of what you get. The other thing that we provide is also visibility into how the carrier is doing. So if you have, earlier in the discussion, we spoke about how a large enterprise might deal with five or six different carriers, and there's always discussions about whether this carrier is doing better or that carrier is doing better. Guess what? We have visibility into that because we own on all of the endpoints that connect the carriers. And so we can give them an aggregate view or a more drill down view into what the loss latency characteristics look like as well, so that you can make very informed decisions for right-sizing the circuit, for capacity planning, for any of the things that you want to do. So those are kind of the important things that network operations folks need in order to run this network.
We're moving beyond the old days of, you know, Armon, SNMP, NetFlow, protocols that were all invented back in the late 90s to solve problems that existed in the late 90s. And for the last 15 years, we really haven't actually done any innovation in visibility and analytics. And it's only even in the last 5 years that, you know, there are tools from other companies that are actually doing things with SNMP that can be called worthwhile. And I use that. SNMP has been a very good protocol in the sense that it did what it, you know, that was the best they could do. But, you know, come on, it's 2015, is it? Computer science has moved on ever so slightly in the last 20, 30 years, you know.
Exactly. And I think there are we've looked at a few solutions that actually camouflage SNMP and call it an API. That doesn't solve the problem either, because you're just providing a translation.
Camouflaging SNMP is an API. That's really cute. I like that a lot. It's true though, right?
Ramesh, I wanted to get into the let's do a deployment scenario. Let's say I've heard the pitch and I'm a believer here. I want to try out Viptela. We've talked about the three components. There's a VEdge router, and actually one quick question about the VEdge router. You said that's a piece of hardware. What is that? Is that custom silicon piece of hardware, or is that just an x86 box running your software?
So that's a very important question, and it's one of the things that we rattled our head with when we started the company, right? And we looked at the price, performance, economics for what is needed at the branch. What do you really need at the branch is predictable throughput with encryption and the flexibility to build software on top. Right? Because ultimately what we wanted to do is actually go to the customer and say, deploy this piece of hardware and forget about it for the next 8 to 10 years, right? Because there's adequate capacity and it has enough juice so that all of the innovation can happen on top of that using just pure software. This is based off of a commercial off-the-shelf network processor, but we looked at using x86 as well. But really, if you look at it for the price points that we wanted to hit and the performance that you get, especially when you bring encryption into the mix, x86 was really not there. That's not to say that it won't get there in the next, say, 3 or 4 years, but today it's not there. And so that's why we said, okay, let's not rock the boat too much on hardware. Hardware is needed, but the real innovation is on the software that resides on the hardware.
Okay, so VEdge then is not available as a virtual machine and sounds like isn't even on your roadmap?
There are a few cases where the kind of capacity that we are talking about is really limited, and also customers don't necessarily own that location. And so in terms of actual deployment and so forth, there have been requirements for a virtual appliance. It's not something that we have today, but that's not to say that it won't come in the future. We have built our software such that actually we can deliver that very quickly. So
if the market changes and x86 and virtual machines is practical, you're ready for that. Like most other companies in the SDN space, it's really the software. And it's all x86 anyway. So
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's the picture that we paint to whoever is looking at hardware, because I think we all know there is a whole lot of buzz around white box switching and so forth. But if you look at the penetration, it's really low. And for a startup to actually bet on something like that is really not practical. And so that's why we said, let's build the hardware, but really put the focus on the software that goes on top, so that when the price performance and the economics are suitable, then you can actually move over to that type of a platform very easily and paint a picture as to how you can decouple yourself from hardware as well longer term. So that's the picture that we paint to all of our customers.
So VEdge has different sizes, like the one for a branch and one for core maybe?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, so there is a smaller version, and when we say smaller in 1 gig, people immediately like raise their eyebrows and say, what the heck are you talking about? Why do I need a gig at the branch? But the small device that we have today does a gig worth of encryption, and the larger device does 10 gigs of encryption. And we focus on encryption because, I mean, ultimately every bit that goes out of our infrastructure or gets exchanged between various points is fully encrypted. And so you really have to look at it as encrypted.
Not a lot of point in talking about numbers for unencrypted traffic when that's not what you're delivering. So yeah.
Exactly.
Practical right. throughput is the issue here. Okay. So we're going to have some variety of VEdge routers, bigger ones in the core, smaller ones at the branch. I'm going to have a vSmart is the name of the SDN controller, right?
That's correct, yeah. And vSmart, think of it as the entity that's really involved in a couple of things, or actually more than just a couple of things. The engineers here will kill me if I say just a couple of things. But it's involved in real-time exchange of information. It's involved in policy. It's involved in making decisions that impact the network as a whole. A simple example of it is when a network device comes into the infrastructure, i.e. gets booted, the first thing that you want to do is actually make sure that it is a valid device that needs to come into the infrastructure. Today, that's a largely missing function. Many guys have
anybody who can connect a router to the network gets to connect a router to the network. The closest we come to security is OSPF routing encryption.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah, so you're actually doing a sanity check saying, hey, this person just asked to be a part of this Viptela domain, and oh yeah, he should be allowed because of how are you doing the checks?
Exactly, right? And so those are the elements that really, in our mind, make sense in an SDN controller, right? Because you want to be able to have that central point where you can allow devices in. You also want that central point to exchange information between various other devices in the network infrastructure. And you also want that central point to translate quote-unquote business logic into something that the network can understand, right? And so to us, that's the function of that SDN controller.
Now, I know that setting up VEdge routers you were talking about, it's not overly hard to deploy those to a branch and set them up. What do I have to ship the VEdge out to my branch with? How much do I have to have configured on it so that it can connect up to vSmart and get a policy?
So the short answer is zero lines of config. And that's one of the places on the operation side that we wanted to innovate. We essentially wanted a model where we can just take a box from the vendor's manufacturing floor and just ship that to the site where it needs to get deployed. And the customer at the central location has all of the capabilities to create a template for that particular device. And after it is authenticated, push the relevant configs to it. And all of this, again, has to be zero touch, because what we have seen is customers really go through a long painstaking process to ship a device from the manufacturing floor to a staging facility, put a minimal config on it, send a very skilled technician to every single site. And in many cases, because they have these things cut over at some crazy times in the night, they have to pay overtime to these guys as well. So the costs go spiraling out of control. What we strive to do here is actually
Cisco has a whole bunch of patents in this area for auto booting over frame realize. I'm true, by the way. And they're actually suing Arista for them as well.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, and I think zero-touch provisioning, I think, used to be a cool word up until that happened. And now I think people are looking to change one or two words here, but essentially have all of the same functionality. Essentially, it's a zero-touch branch.
Okay. So when that VEdge goes out and you've done some innovation there, there's got to be some kind of intelligence that you've baked into this thing. He's going to get a DHCP and then through a DNS call to some canned address, figure out what he needs to do to phone home. There's got to be something there.
Yeah. So I think that's something that I think many of the vendors before us have also done. Essentially, when a device comes up, you phone home and you say, hey, where do I need to go? As long as I have a port enabled with DHCP and I can get a DNS address and resolve a point I can go to, then I can go to that. So we use similar principles as well. There's definitely layers of authentication and all that happens, but that's detail.
When he phones home, is he phoning home to a Viptela cloud server that then reroutes him to like home base, or does he go straight to like a home base location and you've custom built that thing for each customer?
So we use DNS-like principles where you go to the root and the root then tells you that you have to go to something more specific. So we use a similar concept. So it comes to the Viptela cloud first. And then we say, hey, you are this device belonging to this organization. So go talk to that particular entity. And then I'm out of the picture, because the last thing we want is to be in the midst of all the setup of control plane and data plane, because that's not feasible, not scalable, and also has lots lots of liability concerns. So, so that's why.
So he uses you as a referral, basically, in the cloud, and then he goes to phone his real home, if you will, hits a vSmart controller who is then going to authenticate him. And I'm curious about that. What is that authentication process that you do?
So it's actually a place where we have a whole lot of our intellectual property. So we usually share that under NDA to most of our customers.
I just saw a unicorn gallop by. All right.
But we use many of the time-tested, proven security principles because we know there's one thing that you don't want to do in the security realm, and that's rock the boat. Because encryption algorithms get hardened over multiple years, if not decades. Also, these principles and these mechanics also get hardened over a period of time. So you don't want to rock the boat too much on how things
changing
work.
Changing the WAN is easy. Changing the security policy is hard.
Exactly, exactly. Right? And so that's when we used time-tested, proven principles in order to establish that authenticity and also use that to automatically build the large-scale encrypted mesh.
Okay, so he gets authenticated through magical time-tested yet time-tested principles, and then and now that he's part of the mesh, I take it the vSmart controller is then going to give him intelligence. Here's a policy, and that policy is going to be a forwarding policy. But there's more to this as well, because there's a lot of the security beyond just transport encryption. You guys can do like service chaining magic too, right?
Absolutely. And it's an important discussion because if you connect a port from the WAN, essentially on a broadband circuit, into the router, then you have two things to worry about. One is essentially providing enough protection so that your internet to the branch is protected. There is also the other level of protection you need to provide, which is if there is an infected host or an infected PC inside your system, then no level of DDoS protection at the perimeter is going to help you. So you need to be able to identify that. You need to be able to send that to a location on demand in order to scrub or in order to intelligibly move the traffic, right? And this actually came about as a result of a very interesting conversation we had with a customer, right? And this is, again, a large bank which has a huge global presence. They said as a result of the Arab Spring revolution, they had a few countries where they could not trust traffic coming from. And so even though the site was connected to an MPLS infrastructure, they said, I simply cannot trust traffic coming from that site. I need the ability to, on demand, send that traffic to a central location, inspect it, and then send it to wherever it needs to go. Guess what the customer did? They called up the carrier and they said, hey, put this policy so that I can do that. And the carrier essentially came back and said, oh, yeah, it'll take about 3 months to do that, right? And so the customer said, I need to do that like now. The ability to insert a network service into the forwarding path has been a very hard task before, because the most logical way of doing that would be put the device right in front so that you can actually send the traffic through this network service device, like a firewall, and it'll do all of the inspection. But it's not economical to do that, and it's not practical to do that for all the things that you want to do in your network. And that is also another thing that complicates the network today. So one of the things that we can do in our infrastructure is actually advertise network services. So you can put a firewall, advertise a network service so that the entire infrastructure knows that there is a firewall, and then through our software and all of the policy constructs, so you can take it to that point and then take it to the final destination. So it allows you to, and the flip side to that is it allows you to right size your network equipment, right? So if I have to put thousands of these firewalls all over the place versus put them at five different locations and right size them, then my answer is very clear. I want to be able to put them at a central location and right-size them. So that's what these things actually enable.
But you got to drill into that some more too, though, because since this solution layers on top of an existing IP transport that someone's got, when you say advertise a network service, that's most of us that are familiar with traditional stuff are going, I don't know what that means, because there is no standard mechanism to advertise a firewall as a network service, for example, and then shove traffic to it. So can you get into that a little more? Maybe talk about some of the routing that's going on to facilitate this.
Yeah, sure. I was planning to draw a parallel to routing, because that's the closest that it comes to, right? I mean, today, if I have a prefix at a certain location, I can advertise that so that I can attract traffic to that particular prefix. It's a similar concept. It's not exactly the same, but it's a similar concept, mm-hmm. where you have a service and you identify the service using some proprietary concept that we have. And we can advertise the fact that there is that service to the rest of the network infrastructure.
So you were talking about like injecting IP address into the IGP or maybe the BGP domain of the customer?
So again, we're getting into a bit of the detail, but yes, it could involve linking that prefix into the IGP or BGP, or it could also involve sending that information to the controller and then essentially distributing that.
Okay.
What about tunneling? So a big thing about your solution is this use of various tunneling protocols like IPsec or SSL to build the connections between the edge and the center, right? That's where we talked about how the encryption works. Can you just divert the tunnels to where the service is and terminate them at the service point, or do you do it more by routing processes?
No, so you can actually not just divert the tunnel, but you can actually build another tunnel to that particular service. So if I have, let's say regular traffic goes from point A to point B, and now suddenly I want to go to point C before it goes to point B, then I just build another tunnel from A to C and from C to B, and then I can make traffic go that way. So, yes.
So, you're not going to inject a route and say, you know, here's a /32, send it over here. You're going to actually encapsulate it in a separate. You're going to have multiple tunnels for different traffic flows.
Yeah, and if I had a dollar for every time I did that and it worked, I would be a very rich guy. So,
because network engineers around the world say, you're just injecting /32s and it really works. Oh, wow, that's really cool.
Exactly.
That's a really stupid way to do things, but you know, it makes sense because that's all I've been taught, is all about routing and packets. And
exactly.
You know, these. Now, one of the other things too is that you, and I just want to highlight this because we've talked about it elsewhere, but you actually don't just, you monitor the state of your tunnels. You don't just sit there and say, tunnel established, fire the traffic down it blindly. You actually have state in those tunnels.
Exactly, right? And this goes back to the loss latency measurements I was talking about earlier, because if I have at a site two different types of transport circuit, one, let's say, is a high quality and one that is of medium quality, then I need to know what that quality means. And how do I quantify the quality of a circuit? It's using well-known measurements, which would be loss, latency, jitter. Actually, increasingly, MTU also comes into the mix, because we all know that those things keep changing. And the minute we mention tunnel, I'm sure all the operations guys go, oh my God, this is going to be an MTU management nightmare, right? But it's not. There's enough intelligence in the system to figure out what the MTU looks like as well and take care of it.
This is one of the things that I think is important, is that these types of problems are all solvable if you change the way you think about your device around your network. You can detect MTU mismatches in the WAN circuits when you do overlays, if the overlay is the most important thing.
Exactly. That's correct. Yeah. Yes.
Right? The only reason that it doesn't work today is because the overlay is not a thing. It's something that runs on top of the network. It's the second thing, not the first thing. But if you have an SDN WAN, then the first thing you've got to solve is the MTU problem. So it's an imaginary thing. So,
exactly.
And you run BFD. I remember talking to you about you're running BFD down those IPsec and those SSL VPNs to say this is the circuit up, and what's the response time and the latency of those circuits.
Yeah, and one of the design principles that we had was, in the data plane, don't change encapsulation formats and don't change the protocols too much, because we don't own all of the infrastructure in the WAN, right? I mean, we own probably the endpoints at best. And so we need to be able to coexist with a whole bunch of devices along the way. So the design philosophy that we had was stick to standard encapsulation. So if a device in the middle looks at an IPsec packet, it should be able to forward it just like it's an IPsec packet from any other vendor that it's used to. So we didn't want to rock the boat there. Similarly, for anything related to data plane, we wanted to stick to time-tested proven principles again, so that the real innovation happens in knowing that information. It's not really in how you do it. It's in what you do with it, right? So you learn about that information, you apply a layer of intelligence, and then you seamlessly tie that back to all of the things that need to know about it. And what do I mean by that, right? Is today, and I think it goes back to what Ethan just mentioned, where you build an overlay tunnel, somebody else does the measurement on top, and that in turn has the distinct pleasure of notifying a whole bunch of things in the system about what it thinks is the network, right? And so, and it's left, and today it's all piecemeal, right? So in order to really get a wide area networking solution to work today, you have like 7 or 8 different technologies you need to piece together in order to get it to work. And we all know that works absolutely wonderfully, right? I mean, that.
So I think we've pretty much covered everything that we want to cover. I know this show's run a little bit longer than normal for a sponsored show, but I think we've been talking about interesting topics. Now, if you've got more questions about Viptela and how you actually get this into a deployment, there's a whole bunch of issues here about how you make the deployments and what sort of customers they've got. They've already got live customers using this today. You should get in contact with Viptela and start talking to them about those issues. So Ramesh, have you got any, let's try and wrap this up very quickly and say, let's summarize the key points about what Viptela brings to people in their networks today.
Absolutely. Thanks. It was absolutely a pleasure to talk about what we've been thinking about and what we've been trying to achieve and also all the excitement that we've been able to create, if not the deployments as well. So if, and I don't want to call this parting thoughts because I want this to be the introduction thought, right? So if you're interested in learning more about this, please contact us at sales@viptela.com. And because this is packet pushers, we also have a nice incentive for anybody that reaches us via this vehicle. So we'll give a free earphone to whoever reaches us via this vehicle. So in summary, what Viptela really provides is a very robust underlying infrastructure for wide area. That's a very broad term, but underneath the covers, what you have is really large-scale encryption, integrated routing. You have all of the network segmentation capabilities. You have simplified operations. You have essentially full visibility into the infrastructure, and most importantly, a remote control, essentially a centralized vehicle to enforce policies. So if any of these things, one or more of these things interest you, please contact us at sales@viptela.com.
Perfect. And Mr. Banks?
Well, I just wanted to follow up on what Ramesh was saying. I mean, not to understate it. I mean, the ability to abstract away the different WAN connections you have feeding into your different offices is such a huge thing. And because traditional routing for a lot of these things, generally speaking, because you're trying to integrate internet with a private transport, and just that you have to handle it so much differently, and it's so painful. If Viptela makes all that pain go away, now you've got a lot of different options. There's a big economic aspect to this as well as performance aspect that Viptela just made easy. So it's that's really interesting stuff. Anyway, thoughts on SD-WAN and other software-defined stuff and open networking and whatever else I'm blogging on, you can find at my blog, ethancbanks.com, and follow me on Twitter at ecbanks.
And I'm Greg Farrow. Don't forget that Viptela is going to, when you get in contact with the Viptela sales team, just mention that you heard about them on the Packet Pushers. It's great for them to know where you came from. And they're even going to give you a spare pair of earphones so that it's, you know, not bad for just, say, Packet Pushers. That I recommend you should do that. And SDN-WAN is, I think, going to be a really emerging technology in 2015. There's Viptela is probably one of the earliest of the startups, but it's a whole industry trend. You're going to see all of the mainstream vendors as well slowly moving into this direction because people like you and me who run WANs need to have something better. We need to spend less. We need to get flexibility in the WAN. We can't have these, you know, 5-year and 10-year outsourcing contracts doing the same thing year in, year out. We have to come up. Everything that we do in cloud in terms of flexibility, you know, expandability, movability, dynamic change, you know, all that stuff we're doing in the data center, that has to come to the WAN too, and this is where this whole technology comes from. Viptela is one of the first solutions that's mature and actually got real customers, so do get in touch with them. I'm Greg Farrow. You can find me on my blog at Ethereal Mind. Follow me on the Twitters as at Ethereal Mind. This has been Packet Pushers, the greatest networking podcast in the world. We should be back again in a week or so. Make sure you come back so you don't miss out on a single thing. We'd love to hear your feedback about today's show. So head on over to the website and check out the blog post. There'll be that goes with the publishing of the podcast. There's more information. There are some links in there and a good story to go with it. You can always send email to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know what you're thinking. And as always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.